Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. It's a pleasure to be with you again, my very wonderful audience. We're busy contacting my guest who's in Mexico City. And, you know, that's never an easy thing to do. I want to tell you about a new article I have out. It's called Rational Psychopharmacology for, I think, something like therapists, patients, and their families. Rational psychopharmacology. Someday I'm going to do a book on that. But let me tell you now that it's really the best summary I have made of my overview on psychiatric drugs. So if you want something in your hands, we have the PDF up. You can read my views on psychopharmacology, as I put it, rational psychopharmacology. And it includes concise explanations of things like intoxication, anosognosia, better known as medication spellbinding, on chronic brain impairment from the drugs, on the brain-disabling principle of how all the drugs work, and then reviews of all the drugs and how they work, and short summaries of better alternatives to every class of drugs. It's a real great overview article. And as I said, the PDF is available on my website. It came out in the Journal of Contemporary Psychotherapy, a really good journal. And I wrote it so that you don't need a lot of technical explanations in order to really go ahead and just really understand what in the world I'm talking about when it comes to psychotherapy and psychiatry and what we really need in this world. Now, my guest from Mexico City, are you there, Andrew?
Yes, hello, how are you?
Oh, you sound great. You have a great connection. How do I sound to you?
Fine, thank you. It's very good.
Oh, excellent. All right. Well, my guest today is Andrew Almazan, A-L-M-A-Z-A-N. And, wow, I didn't realize you're only 21 years old. He's got an M.D. How do you do that? And a Ph.D. You're going to have to explain that to us after I read this. In this country, to get an M.D. and a Ph.D., especially if you have any advanced training, you're in your 30s. He has got a bachelor's in psychology, so he's well prepared for this audience. What's called a bachelor in medicine, which we could learn more about from Pan American University, a master's in education and cognitive development, PhD in educational innovation, and he's been doing and finishing an advanced certificate studies at Harvard in the Graduate School of Education. And I met him because he called me and asked me if I would come to Mexico City and give a talk. And it was going to be a very, very nice order. But those of you who know my lifestyle with Ginger, who can't travel with me, I don't take those kind of long trips anymore. Ginger's doing really well, by the way. She's really doing well and working with me and doing bunches of other things. But no trips to Mexico City. By the way, I'm going to have Andrew on again right now. We're looking at March 4th to do an intro to the Mexico City Conference because I'm going to be there by live interactive video, and I'm also going to be there by recorded video. So I'm going to be there both live and recorded. And we're going to get together on March 4th to talk about that conference. And perhaps even now Andrew can tell you if there's any way you can get it on the web, if that's not too early. So let me introduce you again to Andrew Amazon, MD, PhD. Welcome to the Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, thank you for your introduction, Peter. And it's a pleasure to be in this program. And well, as you were telling the audience, yes, I am very young, mainly because I started my studies earlier than expected. I started a bachelor degree when I was 12, and mainly because of a special program for gifted students in Latin America, and then I earned my degrees earlier than expected.
Well, and so that leads to what is going to be most of our conversation is going to be about, and what the conference is about, which is gifted children. And I might add that at the age of 21, he's the author of more than 20 articles, which beats what I had at age 21. And he's done lots of speaking and other things. Please, just pick up on maybe how you got interested. We already have a hint about it. How did you get interested in gifted children? And, folks, we are going to be talking about how gifted children get abused with diagnoses and drugs in Mexico, not just the U.S. But let's get started with your interest in this, Andrew, please.
Yeah, well, it should be noted that the field of giftedness is very related with the ADHD misdiagnosis. Mainly because, well, as I will be explaining, the gifted students, all those children with higher abilities, usually are confused. Some of them confused because they don't fit in the educational system. That is a problem that is not exclusive of Latin America or even of America. It happens in Europe, even Asia. But this field, I became interested mainly because of a personal experience when I was 4 years old. I was diagnosed with ADHD and giftedness, something that is very strange, but it happens that usually they give you double diagnosis. And they told me you have a problem for learning, but at the same time you have more abilities. And well, this happens very often in Mexico. And they recommended the drug treatments. Even if I was 4 years old, they used a Conner's test, and they told you have problems for learning. You are learning too many topics that you are not expected to be at your age. So we need to stop you a little because you are getting getting different from other students. And well, in that case, I avoided the drug treatment, but it was a difficult time, mainly because of the pressure by schools. And fortunately, in my case, it didn't happen. Something that it's common in many countries in Latin America, that sometimes the schools, they give the parents a deadline. If your child doesn't return drugged by the next week, you don't have admission or you cannot continue studying here. So, and because usually the parents, they become scared by this, well, by these deadlines and all this information, usually they concede defeat and they give their children all this drug treatments that we know that at the end they don't give any benefit for them. And well, in that case, I continued my education trying to keep a low profile until I was diagnosed now as gifted and in a program by the government, and I started working more in a special educational system. But then I started to become a concern about, well, in my case, I avoided this diagnosis, these treatments, but what happens with other children? Because I personally, when I was a child, I knew 3 or 4 cases who had the same problems, but they were drugged, and at the end, they didn't even finish it, the high school. So that's when I started thinking, well, something needs to be done. Then I knew that the ADHD was wrong, something was required, mainly because of the side effects. When I started studying the bachelor in medicine, I realized all the cardiovascular effects of this treatments, or even the deleterious effect on the brain. But then I believe that I was alone in this opposition toward the mainstream media that promotes all these treatments as a normal style of life. And then I found the Dr. Breggin books. I started reading first the one that is about the truth about Ritalin, and I realized that, well, there is more experience behind why this brain disabling treatments could be very, very dangerous for children. And later, I started in 2009, 2010, I started working directly now with gifted students. And now I have been working for 6 years as director of psychology in the Talent Attention Center. It's currently considered one of the largest centers for gifted in Latin America. And personally, I have attended more than 3,000 gifted children. From these children, 90% they were already misdiagnosed previously with ADHD. So,
did you say 90%, Andrew?
Yeah.
90% of gifted children.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, do you have a data on that for the U.S.? Is that happening here the same way?
Yes. Well, in the U.S., the percent is approximately 66%. So that means that 10 out of 3. So that's still a very large number.
It's a huge number. Yeah, that's two-thirds. Out of 3.
And
66% is what you said, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a huge number. Before you go on, one other question, and I love the way this is going. But something that my audience would be wondering about, and I too, when you get, we don't have a bachelor's in medicine in the U.S. Is that like an MD in the U.S. so that you could, with additional training, practice medicine?
Well, in Mexico, the bachelor in medicine is gives you the ability to directly start treating patients because the MD is of six years long. So because it includes also like a year of training. So, yeah, for example, in this moment, I can start giving treatments for, obviously not the specialized treatments for psychiatrics or for cardiology, for example, but I have all the training as a physician. Yes, I got the bachelor's in Mexico and in the States. They are similar in that when you finish for example, in psychology, you finish psychology, you can further study more and specialize. But with a plain degree, you already have some advance. Yes, that's why. And when I was studying, I decided to focus more my experience on education and cognitive development, all these issues related with intelligence. So that's why I started with a master in education and then the PhD. But yes, they are equivalent. If you finish the bachelor in medicine, you are already trained to start working in a hospital.
Yeah, it sounds actually you're more advanced than an American MD. It sounds like you have the equivalent of an American MD plus maybe 2 years of like internship.
Yes.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah, because as far as I know, in the States, there are 4 years of medicine.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you've got 6.
Yeah.
You're amazing at 21. That's amazing. And you got your bachelor degree in psychology at 16. Well, you certainly qualify for more than gifted. It's like super intelligent and gifted. And when did you write your first papers?
Well, I started the research project when I was 15, so my first paper and my first conference was when I was 16. So and in that case, I started first with writing why it's important to educate with differentiation programs. That means that to recognize differences. Then afterwards, I started working more on alternative programs of education because currently one of the problem of the ADHD is also the overdiagnosis on this we try to track why it is so overused in the educational fields, in psychiatrics. We see that there is a trend that in, from education, I have saw that there is the impact of the interest on egalitarianism. That means that that interest on making everyone equal. The problem with that trend is that in the schools, they, because they want every child to go at the same speed and almost they're to be equal, that can be confused. And at the end, so if someone excels, then they become a problem. And that's why they, in Mexico, for example, they use a lot of the ADHD treatments. Not only because they say that a child could have problems of attention, but because they use directly the treatments to average the population. That means that I recall one case, a 5-year-old child who came for diagnosis of intelligence, and I remember that at the school they were requesting that they wanted to know the IQ number. And then I asked them, why do you want the IQ number? Well, it is important to know it, but why do you want the exact number? And they told me, because we want to know how many points we have to, he has to decrease in order to be normal. And when I realized that one of the main objectives of these drug treatments in Mexico, for example, is to stabilize, like to make standardized population in order that if everyone goes at the same pace, you don't need a special educators because you will have one professor for 40 students. So that is a trend that was translated from politics, and then it became part of education, and then it started promoting the use of psychiatric drugs in children.
Andrew, I'm speaking, folks, with Andrew Almazan from Mexico City, MD, PhD. I've never heard this before. This is one of the most shocking things I've ever heard in my life. It sounds like it's from a science fiction movie, you know, set 500 years from now. is some of this in writing, in literature, and any of it in English? Have you written anything about this that my audience and I could see, or is it all word of mouth stuff that's passed around?
Well, they're from different fields. For example, some of the articles I have published, some articles in the United States China Education Review, because I write usually in Spanish and in English, but in English I have written more about the programs, but yes, there is something about this effect. It's called intellectual drowsiness. Some other scientists, they call it dysgenics, but I believe that it's more like drowsiness. That means that in like the cognitive abilities, they are like stalled, and they stop working. That's why, there is information. For example, someone who has been working on this field, it's also a friend of mine, is Dr. Richard Lin, who made some research projects, and one of those findings was that the population is having problems of dysgenics. That means that intelligence is slowly decreasing, even if the environmental issues such as food and health services are improving. That means that something is happening. And then when we track what's happening, you can realize that part is the educational models, because if they try to make everyone equal, at the end they are going to succeed, because the only way to counteract this trend is if you use alternative models. And usually I make a joke that in the schools they say that the child has attention deficit. I say that the problem is that the school has creativity disorder, then, because they are not open toward the cognitive differences. Because if a child is not learning, it's not really the fault of the student, but more about that something is wrong in the educational model, and the symptom of that problem is experienced at the with some child that is not learning. And yes, the literature is broad. It means that yes, in 2 years ago there was a social experiment called Sleep Thinker. Obviously, fortunately, it was an experiment, but it tried to make a poll about if it really the society wants to be equal or not. And in that case, the Sleep Thinker project made a studio and even some videos that they theoretically created a drug that reduces intelligence. And then they tried to see if the population was going to accept it. And the problem is that more than half of the population in the States, they said that it could be a good way to be happy. Because that's when we realized that this trend in education, it's been accepted in some parts of the society, and that's why the drug treatments to debase intelligence are being so successful. So, yes, there is a lot of information that is currently telling us that, well, there is a problem in education. Some students are not fitting into this model, but those that are excelling this system, they are being drugged in order to reduce their differences. And that's when the ADHD treatments come to make the people more equal.
Andrew, this is the biggest blockbuster I've ever had just come out of nowhere in my, I don't know how many years, 6 years or whatever or more that I've been doing this radio show. I'm really not sure how long I've been doing it, but it's a few hundred. Wow. Do you see any hints of support for this in other countries, including, of course, North America, the U.S. and Canada?
Regarding what, the educational changes?
Yes, the making people less intelligent to fit in better.
Well, the problem is not really that there is a policy to make everyone equal, but the problem is that there is a culture that, for example, is in the 1950s, when there was the space race, the social culture was more open toward children who started in university earlier. There was a culture of promoting science, of promoting scientists in order to it was at the race against the Soviet Union. But the problem is that currently now, the social awareness is more focused on being less, studying less, being less, excelling less in order to be happy. And the problem is that there are many myths. And one of the myths is that if someone is more intelligent, he's going to be less happy. And that's not true, but the problem is that in the average, in the States, and all Latin America, we have many myths and stereotypes about if someone is more intelligent, he's going to be left alone, he's not going to establish a stable family. So at the end, all those cultural myths, they end into an effort, even by the same parents, because I have received many cases of parents who tell me they prefer the child to be happy but not intelligent. And that's when I tell you about that the intelligence and happiness are not a separated field. They can be at the same time. But this is not like a directed effort to reduce intelligence. It's more a direct effort to make education more affordable. Because if you have one teacher per 30 or 40 students, then you are going to cut your expense on educational programs. But how do you achieve a teacher that controls 40 students? Well, you have to drug some of them. And that's what happens in not only the States, but also in Mexico. I don't know if that happens in the States, but in Mexico, it is not strange that some drug treatments are given to children without any medical support. That means that if a teacher detects that a student is not learning at the same pace or is learning more, and being or being the disruptive in the classroom, they in the lunchtime they give them some Ritalin and some of these drugs in order to make them more dumb. It will be like more more calm in the classroom. And this problem, the problem with this is that there are some alleged tests, such as the Connors test, that they are not standardized, but they make the teachers believe that they can diagnose psychiatric disorders using only a non-validated program. For example, in my experience, I have worked with 3,000 standardized cases with tests, with IQ, for example. And the problem with tests that are used at schools for ADHD, such as the Connors test, is that they don't evaluate the child. They evaluate what a teacher believes of a specific child. They ask the teacher to rate from 1 to 5, from 1 to 6. If you believe that the child it responds well or not, is it moved too much or not. And the problem with that is subjective. And the problem is that the mainstream media has promoted that one of these tests is enough to diagnose a problem, a psychiatric problem, and then they go to the medical treatments. And this overuse of these questionnaires, of these tests, is producing also this trend of why we have a 66% of gifted children misdiagnosed with ADHD. Because having a child misdiagnosed means also that that specific child is not going to receive the adequate educational program, because the child is going to be believe that he has a disease, and the parents are not going to ask for another program because they are going to believe also that because their child is affected by the ADHD, he should stay in the same school.
Wow. I'm taking notes, which I don't do during my show, so it's a little distracting because what you're saying is so important. This is incredible information. I want to tell the folks that we talked earlier on the phone, but not about this bombshell. And Andrew, and again, this is Andrew Almazan, Almazan, 21 years old, with an MD and a PhD. And indeed, the MD is a 6-year program, not a 4-year program like in the U.S. So this is this man who sounds so mature and is so educated is in our country would be you'd be in college smoking dope and drinking, right? The way our values are going here. So it's just amazing and a pleasure to be talking with you. But one of the things that we did discuss is that it is also illegal in Mexico for non-MDs to prescribe medication, but people are looser about those things. So you would literally have teachers and I guess working with the psychologists, or they just do it on their own, Andrew, when they give the kids Ritalin.
Yeah, the problem is also that, well, we know that there are always going to be some professionals who, for some monetary gain, they are going to give treatments, even if they are not required. But the problem is not that there are professionals giving these treatments. The problem is that the parents are accepting these treatments. And the issue is that, well, it is not common that the parents receive the truth about ADHD. They don't know, for example, that it was the treatments are really not making the child to pay more attention. They are simply making the child to stay calm, and staying calm is not the same of learning. But the problem is that all the issues that saying that the ADHD exists, and if the child is not adapting to a program, he should be treated. And at the end, the parents accept this apparent truth, and at the end they give their children to some professionals to drug them. And that's where I have tried to work more, because if at the end the parents oppose the treatment, there is nothing the teachers or the psychologists or even a physician could do. But the problem is that the parents are not opposing, and they are not opposing because they don't know an alternative. And that's why I have been working also on an alternative. If a child is excelling in a average educational model, that doesn't mean that he needs to be debated. That means that he needs to be changed from his environment. If a program is not working, he needs another program. But and that has been a long road from changing this misdiagnosis. For example, in Mexico in 2010, 95% of gifted children were misdiagnosed with ADHD. Now in 2016, they are 90%. We could say, well, it was a 5% change, but that 5% change means thousands of students who now are receiving an alternative attention. So at the end, it's a long road of fighting all these myths, stereotypes, and even the special interests of the establishment. But at the end, in the models that I have been working with gifted students, it means to give them an alternative where they are not drugged. I have been working with, and that's one of the main topics of my articles, something called the Intellectual Enhancement Program. It involves that gifted students work with other gifted students. And there is a reason behind that policy. 200 years ago, Thomas Jefferson, is also one of the founders of the United States, he said that there is nothing more unequal than to give equal treatment to unequal people. That means that we need to treat different people according to their needs and their capacities. And if a child is more capable on cognitive fields such as mathematics or more capable on arts, well, we need to provide them with more with a differentiated program. That means that's what it means, differentiation. For example, one of the most successful programs I have been working, not only in Mexico but also in the States, this one of the intellectual enhancement program, it uses 2,000 effective hours per year. If we divide that hours, that means that there are approximately 10 or 11 hours per day from Monday to Friday. And that means that they are in a new environment with children with higher abilities, but also where their classes are more demanding. So, and in that environment, there is no room for ADHD because they are so challenged by their academic duties even by the same environment with other gifted, that they are simply the symptoms of ADHD disappear. And that's when we find that, well, these children really never had ADHD. What they had was that the environment was not challenging enough, and they only needed a new program. Fortunately, in the States, they have more gifted programs in comparison with Mexico. The issue is that the main problem is that the gifted child is not getting through this process. They stay with the misdiagnosis, and they don't take the step to an alternative program. And that's why currently, if we want to know how many gifted students are really released from this misdiagnosis, we only have to see the percentage of PhDs in each university. We see that thousands of children, teenagers get into the high school, then as a lower percentage gets into the bachelor, then even a lower percentage into the master's degree, and then only a very, very small percentage gets into the PhD programs. And then we find that, the problem is that not all of them are getting through, because if a child receives drug treatment when he's 8 years old, it's obvious that when he is 20 years old, he's not going to be capable enough to succeed and fulfill all his own potential.
You've suggested that there's a difference in the politics. Use the word the politics in the U.S. and in Mexico, or something going on in Mexican political ideology that is more compatible with this dumbing down of people, making people equal by chopping off the best. Is that socialism or a communism trend or some other kind of political trend that encourages this?
Well, I believe that it's the main, yes, it can be a little of socialism, and we don't need to go very too far into history to find examples of this. In the 1940s, after the Second World War, in Russia, well, it was the Soviet Union, Stalin, he forbid all the use of IQ tests. And when we ask why he was forbidding the IQ tests, if they are simply tests for knowing who is intelligent in comparison with the mean, and his reason was that it created divisions in society. So at the end, it was the moving socialism into psychology. And the problem is that if we don't respect that there exist differences, then we are directing towards trying to make everyone equal. And yes, the problem is that we say that the policy it has been getting more strength, but the strength has been is being produced because of people that are accepting this. It is very commonly sold in the media that the ideal of a child is to go to school and then to have many friends and then the girlfriends, and to be distracted, and then when they get to the teenage, when they are teenagers, that they have to rebel against their parents. So all these policies, what they are producing is that at the end, well, children are being debased because they are losing their more valuable time when they should be preparing themselves for the future in some issues where we find that, well, when they grow up, they get into drugs and alcohol. So, yes, there is a change in society that, well, we can see that also in that if a child has a bad childhood and he's not well educated, well, the crimes also can when he is adult could skyrocket. That's why the main policy to reduce crime is to educate people. But the problem is that now, being more intelligent, studying more, is not the objective of many teenagers or many children.
You know, many years ago, Andrew, I spoke at the Harvard School of Education, invited by one of the instructors. I guess by a pediatrician who was getting some advanced education there, and spoke to a large audience there. I suspect that the Harvard School of Education would not be inviting me to speak now because the drug companies have so much greater control over what goes on in academic education, and also because the Harvard Medical School, which is in Boston, and the education school is in Cambridge, but the medical people are leaders in the world in taking money under the counter in order to promote drugging kids. What sort of opposition have you found to what you're saying? Or have you found a way to communicate without drawing the kind of destructive reactions that most of us do?
Well, one of the problem has been the economical interests, because it is not something that needs to be ignored, that if a child gets diagnosed with ADHD and then he's drugged, he's going to become a profit for these factories, considering that the child is not going to leave the drug treatment. That's why I have read that they are inventing the senior ADHD. That means that if you are very old and you forget where are your keys, then you have ADHD. And then when you see there is a complete system, they diagnose children with ADHD when they are very young, and they continue the treatment all their life. So at the end, they are giving money each month to buy these treatments. And yes, I have found opposition mainly because we are talking about making a difference on something where there are economical interests. In the case of education, there has been a little less resistance from some schools that they are so interested in getting rid, taking out all their gifted children, and so they accept that I get through and I take them. But sometimes they don't want it because they are also the psychologists and the physicians who are each month they receive their money, and then they oppose. And there I have found strong opposition, but also strong support. There's more support from some from parents, also from psychologists, but the main opposition has been from physicians. And yes, it's obvious that some of them have become used to receive their monthly pay by the drug factories. The problem is that they are trading with human life. It's not the same that you are selling cookies. No, they are selling treatments that at the end they know that they are not salubrious. At the end, they have effects that are that could be permanent.
Would you say then that, I mean, it does sound like you're getting more acceptance, you're being heard more than a lot of other folks who are talking in this arena. Maybe it's because you come from being a gifted child, and you're speaking on behalf of gifted children. I just think it's wonderful that you are able to get published on this subject and able to, you know, be at Harvard and to do things like that. And it's really amazing. You keep saying things I've never heard before. I did not know they were now working on a ADHD for seniors. I didn't know that. Have you heard about that in the USA at all, or is that down in Latin America?
No, that's in the U.S. And even the idea of the senior ADHD came from the U.S. to Mexico. So that's an idea from the States. Because also Mexico usually replicates everything that happens in the States. So if in the States they say something, at the end, in Mexico they are going to start saying also the same. And yet, if you search in the Internet, in Google, and you type senior ADHD, you are going to find that currently there are starting to write that there is ADHD in the elderly, ADHD in adults, and then in the seniors. And the problem is that the drug companies reveal then that this is a complete system, that the 60 or 70 years client, that means the client is going to be paying for them many, many decades. And then the problem is that we say, yes, but this is human talent that is going to be wasted, but also is going to compromise their health, because in the case of gifted children who come here in Mexico for attention, the problem with these drugs is that they not only affect the heart or the brain, but also that they produce psychological handicaps. Many of these children, 40% approximately, they come with depression symptoms. Part is that they don't know why they are different, so they feel that they are not comprehended by society. But also because we know that if we start changing the brain chemistry with these drugs, when at the end we are going to start having mood disorders, and that's what I am getting here, that these gifted children, they start becoming depressive. And the main issue is how to stop this. Well, the best way is that these children never receive treatment, because, well, you wrote a book recently about that you cannot withdraw the drugs in a very fast way. You have to go slowly to avoid withdrawal effects. So instead of having this problem, it would be better if no children get drugged. Well, we know that's not possible, but yes, it has been an issue considering that there are people who actively seek to treat children, even if they are 2 or 3 years old. And in Mexico, there are not rules against treatments for very young children. I know that, for example, in the States, the FDA, well, it makes some ruling against this, but in Mexico, if you're a physician and you want to diagnose a child with ADHD, you can drug him when he's 3 years old, and there is no way they are going to punish you. And that's something that needs to be changed also.
You may not know that the FDA recommendations, which are put into the FDA-approved full prescribing information for the drugs, they're not binding on doctors at all, and they are often defied in many, many different ways, including, you know, the huge numbers of our children who are being drugged at age 2, 3, 4 when there are no psychiatric drugs approved for that age. So it does go on in this country, and those rules aren't binding. However, doctors can get sued in this country if they misuse drugs, and you can convince a jury that this is below the standard of care of what a reasonable physician should do under the same circumstances. Then doctors can be sued, and I do a lot of medical malpractice. Is there such a thing as medical malpractice in Mexico? Can a parent sue a doctor or an institution that injures their child with drugs?
No, I have never heard about someone who wins when a case with that. Well, this culture of suing doctors by mispractice is its first step. Currently, in Mexico, for example, the patients can sue a doctor if they leave some side effect, but that is very evident. For example, if in a surgery they leave some organ or something damages, and they prove that there is a damage, they can receive some economical retribution. But no, if someone gives a treatment for a child, drug treatments, they can tell that because in the States, they use the reason that because in the United States they do the same, they have the reason to do the same in Mexico. And that's the problem, as I was telling you. In Mexico, they copy many things from the States. So they use all the information given by the media in the States to say, you see, in our neighbor in the North, they do the same, so that's why this is correct. And yes, that's a problem, that it's not possible for parents to sue the doctors for misusing the drug treatments. Well, for example, there is in Mexico, I believe that also happened in the States, but in Mexico it's more common, there is a misuse of the electroencephalography. We know that this monitoring method records electrical activity of the brain, but there is no way we can know how the brain works using only this method. But here in Mexico, they even created a program that they use the electroencephalogram with a child, and then using that machine, they say a child has problems of attention. And we know that it is not possible to diagnose anything unless epilepsy or very, very strong problems in neurology using only this electrical activity of the brain. But, well, this is a misuse of a neurological tool, but many physicians get away with that because there is no rule that stops them from using all that treatment or with using a method, well, or based on a method that is not proven.
Well, I don't want to disillusion you too much, but if you Google FDA approves EEG for ADHD, you'll find the FDA has recently announced, well, actually, this goes back further than I thought. It started a couple of years ago. The FDA has been approving new brainwave tests for ADHD. Our FDA is a sick unethical, immoral organization. You know, they're trying now to approve shock treatment without testing it, that it's so safe. It's like as safe as a new kind of bandage. So you don't have to approve shock treatment, get any approval, do any tests, because it's patently obvious that it's great and harmless. This is the FDA's position under pressure from mainly the American Psychiatric Association, which is our shameful trade union of psychiatrists. So, oh, Lord, it's pretty sick out there in the U.S. in this regard, too. And again, folks, we're talking with Andrew Almazan, A-L-M-A-Z-A-N, who is an M.D. and a Ph.D. and was himself and in some ways is young enough to still be a gifted child. He's 21 years old and has an M.D. and a Ph.D. in many publications and is doing absolutely great work in this field. Oh, Andrew, we have about maybe 8 minutes left. I want you to just take a minute and think about what have you left out? What do you want to say maybe that you haven't covered yet? You've been just startling me all hour long.
Yeah. Well, the main issues that the main we can take away message will be that, well, there are many mainstream media efforts, all the industries efforts to drug children, but at the end, the ones that have the last word, the ones who decide at the end are the parents. So if the parents at the end, they say no, no treatments, no misdiagnosis with ADHD, then there is no way they can drug them. So I believe that there is a very big hope that if parents know more about this, they can oppose effectively, because there is, fortunately, there is no way they can forcibly treat a child with a drug treatment with ADHD. There are other ways they can forcibly treat, for example, with tuberculosis or some medical diseases. But in the case of ADHD, the parents are the ones who have the last word. So I believe that the responsible for stopping all this issue of the ADHD and all the treatments at the end are the parents, because as professionals we can only recommend and say all the evidence, but at the end the parents are the ones who will be able to speak with their family and slowly changing this policy of medicating instead of educating. And I believe that's where we have hope of changing all these trends.
Well, I agree with you that the big hope is in addressing parents, absolutely. But I'm going to have to disillusion you again, because in the U.S., it is not uncommon for courts to force parents to drug their children, including for ADHD, and even to take children away from parents, to take the guardianship away if parents refuse treatment. And I've been involved in, as a medical expert, in lawsuits where parents have been put in this situation. I've actually, a couple of occasions, helped to influence courts to back down on this and even to empower me long distance working with local physicians in different states to help parents take their kids off drugs. But in this country, there's quite an increasing trend in the direction of having what we call child protective agencies go in and force parents to drug their kids.
Well, that is much worse, because, well, here in Mexico, they can force the child, but only with using threats such as saying to the parents, we're not going to admit your child next week to the school. And, well, that's a strong way to force a parent. But, no, if you're telling me that the court rules against the parents, well, we are talking about a higher level of complicity of the government on all these efforts. And, yes, what I believe that, well, but at the end, if the people know that these treatments have economical gains and that really a physician who is diagnosing and giving treatment to a child is not doing it really, well, in some cases possibly because they really care for the children, but many cases it's really because they are going to get a commission for indicating a treatment. But I think that the only way that we have in this case is to have a passive resistance from the parents and from professionals, and to start adding more people who believe in this in order to one day change all these policies.
It's so good to be talking with you. As we were talking, I Googled you, and folks, you can easily find him on the internet. Here's one wonderful heading that's right at the top of Googling Andrew Almazan, MD, Mexico. Mexican child prodigy is one heading. There's just one heading after another. One is a CNN.com, 8 Whiz Kids are the future of medicine. You're out there and you're doing good work, sir. You're getting publicity.
Yes, well, I strongly believe that I can use the media in order to broadcast a message. So that's why when I started getting into the media with my case, when I graduated from university at 16, I used all this broadcasting in order to get to the people a message, and that message is that for the gifted children, that there is hope of an alternative, and also that all these misdiagnoses, all this excessive use of psychiatric treatments, well, that there are not rights, but that there is also a way out. And yes, that's why one of the books that is very important for me from you is the last one that you wrote about taking out all these drugs. And yes, I believe that we need an organized effort from many professionals in order to slowly change all this problem promoted by the mainstream media.
I have to tell folks about this, Andrew. I'm looking at a picture of you on FoxNews.com, Mexican child prodigy. Andrew Almazan is the world's youngest psychologist at age, and then it's about you at age 16. What a great pleasure to have you on the air, sir. Huge admiration. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much.